Good afternoon. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California, continuing number 325. The backside of this tape is 325 and is recorded June the 1st, 1978 in Carmel, California, continuing into what I want to call the World Watchers International to see what is going on in the world and share this information with you. When I went off the air, formally off of KLRB with the commitment of being on public broadcasting, or KZAP, or the other colleges that received this up at Humboldt, or different radio stations, and decided to go to this format of the cassette newsletter, I received a lot of telephone calls from people that are interested in organizing and meeting, and other people that want to continue to help me with the research. And I will keep you informed on the tapes of various things, of course, that I'm publishing and doing. I've been teaching some courses at Lutheran College, a college accredited classes on the conspiracy, and may be doing a complete series in the fall. If I do, maybe we can tape record those sessions so that you could get those tapes if you want them, and it would be as if you were attending the class, and send you bibliography of the courses as they continue. I will be active, more active than I was before, and I'm certainly receiving a lot of information every day coming in. I'm just flooded with it, but I hope this new format works out and that you're satisfied with it, and that proof of your satisfaction will be an intensity or a activity on your part to get some of this information distributed among the people that you know and the public officials and candidates that are running for office and calling talk shows and writing letters to the editor. When I went to KLRB this last week to pick up mail and messages, there was a package for me there left by a man. He didn't have a return address on it, and his name was just scribbled. And it was a large yellow envelope, and they were wire service sheets. And he said, "Dear Mrs. Bressel, I'm delivering this in hopes that you'll be able to use it. It contains everything that went over the wire services of this military and civilian at the time that John F. Kennedy was killed. It's 2 days prior to his death, the United Press International Stories, and for some time after his death. It was collected by my father when he was in the military as a crypto officer and was inherited by me. I found it after he died. I hope you can use it. Love and hope." And a name there, which is just scribbled, which he obviously didn't want me to contact or thank him, get in touch with him on the matter. This is very important research. It's valuable to read it. I just read the first page in a UPI story. As soon as John Kennedy was killed, it stated, "John Kennedy was assassinated by 3 bullets, period." Now that is very interesting, because there had not been an autopsy on the body. There had been no indication of how many shots came out. It's true that people on the street heard 3 shots, but certainly by 1963, the military was familiar with silencers. At Senator Church's committee, information came out about the umbrella being used as a weapon during this time period. Even before the 60s, they were developing those. And the car that John Kennedy was driving in, of course, was never photographed or examined from a standpoint of a murder taking place to see if there were bullets in the car or on the floor of the car or in the seat, or if the metal from the bullets that came in there matched the metal of the bullets in the body. The car was immediately destroyed. John Kennedy's body was taken out of Parkland Hospital against the laws of the police department to do the autopsy there, taken to Bethesda Hospital in Maryland, where Arlene Specter managed to get all the witnesses to fit their evidence and testimony that it was 3 bullets, the original story that the UPI carried at that moment. Dr. Hume in the Navy had to burn his original papers, or he did them, of his autopsy papers. He later fit all of his findings into the framework that it was 3 bullets and nothing else. The doctors of John Connolly disagreed with this. They talked about the impossibility of the direction of the bullets in John Connolly's wrist and thigh. John Connolly's clothing was destroyed and dry cleaned purposely. John Kennedy's clothing was locked up and has never really, the fiber tests have never really been put to show whether there were entry or exit wounds. The bloody coat of John Kennedy's is in the National Archives, but I've never heard of anybody wanting to examine the holes for the directions. Even the autopsy pictures at the table when the body was there were never developed. So you see that the decision was made when Lyndon Johnson was there on Air Force One going back to Washington. He was told Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone. The UPI said three bullets did it. The Warren Commission was a total fraud and had to fit all of the testimony and evidence into this story. I appreciate what he left off, and of course, I will try to get them typed up and be able to use this and share this information with you. On Dialogue Conspiracy number 321, May 14th, 1978, I did a program about Ingmar Bergman's movie The Serpent Egg, and I gave reasons for my going off KLRB, and partly it was because so many things were happening to people around me. They're still happening, and I am concerned they're happening to people that are contacting me, but for personal reasons that are on that tape, I decided to go off. And one of the reasons I mentioned was the incidences happening around me and my family. I mentioned Emmett Grogan, the man who ran the diggers in San Francisco at the height of the hippie movement, and how he was at a particular agent's home where my son was just before, I believe that my son was poisoned. And Emmett Grogan was there, and Marvin got very upset with Emmett Grogan there because he remembered what happened to the hippies and the diggers in San Francisco. So my son had left the place, and Emmett Grogan went on, and 6 weeks later, so he was found dead at the end of a subway in New York City. Now, I know Paul Krasner came up to San Francisco, and there was a wake and a big party celebrating, or can you use the word celebrating? So-called friends of Emmett Grogan got together and had a wake because of his death. And the Berkeley Barb wrote up about the wake, and there were several other articles about Emmett Grogan. But I didn't know until yesterday, I never had knowledge that Emmett Grogan had authored a book called The Final Score in 1976, put out by Ballantine Press, on the plutonium heist. There are a lot of books out on the plutonium nuclear bomb connection. And you see here my list of bibliographies that I'm enclosing now with Dialogue Conspiracy, that Tom Davis and Aptos, under the name of Research, carries these books. And he has a list of books on the plutonium nuclear bomb connections, Brothers in Blood, the International Terrorist Network, Hidden Terrors, and Operation Plumbat. There's books coming out about Karen Silkwood's death. But here is a book on that list by Emmett Grogan on the plutonium heist. And we know that Mr. Blair was writing a book on the oil conspiracy. In fact, he had completed it. And just when it was going to print and about to get out, Mr. Blair was dead. And he couldn't go around and push that book. That book got dropped. He couldn't expose the oil conspiracy. There's certain people like Garson Kanin and Ruth Gordon that get on talk shows over and over again. Not that they're not good people, but there's certain people that just seem to be allowed to live to talk about their books. But John Blair, when he wrote in 1976 The Control of Oil, also put out by Pantheon Press, he was dead. His book never did get out in the same way that this book can't get out by Emmett Grogan. At least I keep up with books I didn't know was out, and the obituaries had no mention or connection of any investigation into plutonium missing or the plutonium scene with the possibility that that's why he died. Just like Mr. Blair's death was never investigated as a possibility that it killed all promotion of his book. There is a movie coming out, I mentioned just quickly on my last program, or next to last, called Capricorn One. It's advertised now. It'll be here playing in the major cities starting next week. And the advertising goes, "Would you be shocked to find out that the greatest moment of our recent history may not have happened at all?" And, of course, if you have Dialogue Conspiracy, where I talk about the moonshot, that was number 287, September the 19th, October the 19th, 1977. We never went to the moon. And, again, you can order that book that I used as a basis of that particular show, even though there are two new books out since then, and I've listed them for you also. Mr. Kasing refers to that as America's $30 billion swindle. We never went to the moon. You can buy that book and read it. It's a very good book, and it has a lot of points from the standpoint of a scientist. I'm not a scientist. Mr. Kasing is, and that's why he happened to write the book. There is an article in the Oregonian Friday, March 17th, 1978, if you can get that paper, it comes from Portland, Oregon, that the Soviet Union has brought back rocks from the moon, the Lunar 24 mission, and they're not explainable. They're a composition never before found on the moon. They said they found, we've never found a high iron, low titanium, low traced element composition. I might have mentioned that to you before, I don't remember, but it's interesting if they were landing at the same place to come back with different kinds of minerals. And we will watch, I think the movie will be worth seeing. I'll see it, of course, and see how much information it gives out on the moonshot. Now, the propaganda machine never ends in the United States, and in order to be aware of what's going on, you have to have sources of information, direct sources and second sources. That, and I like to compare constantly documents I have to printed material. A lot of people say, what are your sources of information? And those of you that know my work know that there's a wide range of them. But I went into Long's Drugstore this week and found a book which has been out of print for quite a few years, 6 or 7 years. And I know I assigned it as a textbook when Ray Fabrizio and I gave the course in Monterey Peninsula College on conspiracies, and it was no longer in print. And the name of the book is The Warren Report. Even though it was the most extensive book, an investigation the government had ever done, they weren't proud enough to continue this book to put all of the researchers down and at rest once and for all by referring to their book. So the Warren Report went out of print. The 26 volumes of exhibits and testimony upon which the report was based was limited, I think, to 8,000 copies right from the start, even though there might be a market for them today if the government printed them. But the Warren Report went out of print. So now it's 1978, and at Long's Drugstore, which is a big chain like the Thrifties, and goodness knows where else they sell, you're lucky. You can buy the Warren Report, and I took it over to Carmel High School where I gave a class last week to show them what you could buy. Now, in the first place, it's a bargain. They have a bargain table where it says $5.95 reduced to $1.99. And Tom Davis, who has books out of research in Aptos, told me that these books were being sold at 60 cents to the bookseller. So you can see for 60 cents how nice it is to flood the country at a time of controversy into the assassination of John Kennedy and give people this Warren Report. But this book is not a first source of information, because the very first source of information for the researchers was published by the government printing office, or by there were two other paperback volumes that came out, but they were identical in essence. And then there was Doubleday and Company, a private book publisher, which published the Warren Report with an introduction by the notorious Louis Neisser. Now, the thing about this Warren Report is that it's published by the Associated Press, which is an acknowledged, admitted conduit of the Central Intelligence Agency that has also been suspect in the assassinations. It has no address inside of where you would order another one. It just says printed in the USA and has a printing company. It's got no address, and it has no date. It's just put out for a very cheap price, for $1.99, for you to read the Warren Report. And then when you open the Warren Report and you turn to the section after the first investigative work is done and they go into the exhibits, there's no table of contents. No person can do research with this new book. There's no person in the United States of a second generation, because this is 14 years later, going on 15 years later, that can use this book for any investigative work. It has to be pure propaganda. There's no table of contents in the book at all. And when they get to Appendix 5, and this is important, of this new cheapy version, Appendix 5 has a list of witnesses before the Warren Commission. They state the following is a list of 552 witnesses whose testimony was presented to the Warren Commission. This is Appendix 5 of the new book. And Appendix 5 of the original Warren Report, even the one put out by Doubleday, has on page 483 a list of witnesses, and they say the following is a list of 552 witnesses whose testimony was presented to the Warren Commission. But the difference between the Warren Report, the original Warren Report that came out in 1964, And the Warren Report that comes out in 1978 is that one has the list of the volume number and the page number where you can find that testimony. In other words, there's been a lot of controversy about Sheriff Craig, who saw Lee Harvey Oswald leave from the front of the book depository. And there was a witness, Warnell, who saw him leave from the back of the depository. So you look up Craig in the original Warren Report, and it says Volume 6, page 260. But in this book, there is no page number or volume number. In other words, the Warren Report, the first original source of information in the Section 5, Appendix 5, has the volume number and page number of every witness. So if you're studying this case and you hear about a person like Lydia Dimitri, you can look up Volume 9, page 60, because she was one of the most important witnesses before the Warren Commission. You can look her up and get her testimony at a library, and the original sources are there. Or George or Jean de Morenschild, Volume 9, page 166 or page 285. But in the new cheapy version, they just have the names and they don't tell you about them, so that all you know is that Sheriff Craig is a sheriff. You don't know what he said to Lee Harvey Oswald in the offices of Captain Fritz after the assassination. He's just a name among 552 people. All it says is Roger Craig, witness at assassination scene. But if he saw Lee Harvey Oswald get into the car of Michael and Ruth Payne, and he says, don't get them involved because then everybody will know who I am, Sheriff Craig is an important witness, and therefore you can't find any information. Then you turn to the back of the original source, Warren Report. The entire Warren Report was written with footnotes, and no matter how bad it was, you have chapter 2. The first footnote in there is 4H130. That means volume 4 of the hearings on page 140 regarding Governor John Connally. Or you can find 7H441, the testimony of Kenneth O'Donnell. And the original Warren Report goes from page 817 back to page 879. So that's 62 pages of footnotes with volume number and page number. And the cheapy version leaves all of that out. They don't leave it for you. And then the Warren Report, the original Warren Report, then has an index of names. And this has absolutely no index of names. So that the Associated Press, a conduit of known conduit of the Central Intelligence Agency, has come out with a cheapy book that people could hardly not miss and can't afford if they want it, and they're wholesaling them at 60 cents a book and calling it the Warren Report. The cover-up goes on and is insidious and should be exposed, and people should be writing letters to the Associated Press, to the congressman, to wherever you take this tape, to the President of the United States, and say, this isn't free enterprise, this is propaganda. You're covering up a controversial issue. There's 170 books critical of the Warren Report, and news people can get on and write editorials and lambast us or call us crazy or kooks if we investigate, and we can't turn you on to the sources because the original source of the Warren Report isn't available, and this cheapy version tells people a story that the government wanted implanted in their minds in 1963 and 1964. And in 1978, they're selling them out for 60 cents to be picked up for a couple of dollars and making it look like it was a $6 book. World Watchers International has people listening and subscribing to the tapes in the Yukon or in Ireland or France and England. A very good researcher, Harry Irwin, has been doing work in Belfast for many, many years, and he has a little newsletter. It's edited and published. If you want to write to Harry Irwin, Ravensdene Crescent, Ravenhill, Belfast, it would be nice to write and subscribe to his newsletter, and I will be talking all the time about the newsletters of Penn Jones and Sherman Skolnick in Chicago, his work. But Ted Gandolfo has written a brief article for the newsletter that you can send from Harry Irwin in Belfast. And Ted has summarized the relationship of the Chief Counsel of the House Select Committee on Assassinations, G. Robert Blakey, to the FBI and the CIA, and his relationship to Louis Neisser, who wrote the introduction to the Warren Report, which I have right here, and also to modalities of organized crime. Ed Gandolfo wrote, in quotes, "The Chief Counsel of the House Select Committee on Assassinations, G. Robert Blakey, is a legal hitman for organized crime. He has permitted the committee in Washington to be captured by the FBI and the CIA," end quotes. I don't happen to agree with Ted Gandolfo that Mr. Blakey allowed the committee in there to be captured. I believe that the committee to investigate these assassinations was set up originally by members of the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and the FBI, and that the succession from Henry Gonzalez through Mark Lane and Don Freed into encouraging Rusty Rhodes and these people to sign petitions to get a committee going, and then handing it over to Richard Sprague, who was a law partner in the District Attorney's Office of Arlene Specter, the same attorney that fit all the evidence into the three-bullet story. He worked with him for 10 years, and then Mr. Sprague, through news leaks in the New York Times, through CIA, known CIA contacts in Washington Star, New York Times, caused Mr. Sprague to have an altercation with Henry Gonzalez, and then in comes Mr. Blakey. But that succession from Henry Gonzalez to Mr. Sprague to Mr. Blakey was called out by me step by step. He never thought that the time to open the investigation was when people like Bernard Fensterwald or George O'Toole and Mark Lane or Mr. Popkind or Mr. Oglesby, the AIB, when these people weren't willing to see all the information that was available, then it wasn't time to open it up. When the researchers agreed that these facts exist, we could have stood together and allowed a committee to form to give them the minimum demands, as I had put down in a position paper, of what constitutes a good committee. I have always mistrusted the people that were setting up the committee, and therefore, why should I trust the committee? But getting back to Ted Gandolfo's allegations or comments in the JFK Assassination Forum article, which is a good article, he says that the key figure in the surrender of the Select Committee is Robert Blakey, its present chief counsel. In charging that Blakey had odd and recent connections with organized crime characters, Ted Gandolfo claimed in February 1976 that Robert Blakey associated himself with Mo Dalitz, one of the early activists with organized crime in America. On that date, Gandolfo substantiated that there was a sum of money that Mr. Robert Blakey sold his expertise to Mo Dalitz as an expert in the area of organized crime, that money was transacted, and that Blakey refused to say how much money he received in legal fees working with Mo Dalitz. What isn't in this forum, in this article by Ted Gandolfo, is the reminder that Mo Dalitz worked with Robert Mayhew while Mayhew was heading up these assassination teams. Robert Mayhew stayed at the home of Mo Dalitz, and I have that on documents. They were in the hotel room when Howard Hughes, the body substituted for Hughes, was brought in 1976. Mayhew stayed at the home of Mo Dalitz and worked with him simultaneously with the assassination teams of John Roselli and Sam Giancana and organized crime. Blakey, of the now heading the House Select Committee, did legal work with Mo Dalitz, and he refers all of his questions about his relationship to Mo Dalitz now to his attorney, Louis Neisser, the same man who wrote the introduction to the Warren Report that claimed that anybody who questioned the Warren Report was really deranged, but more serious than that, than calling us neurotics. Louis Neisser used cover stories put in by, again, agents of the Nazi Galen operation to discredit Lee Harvey Oswald and make it believable that he would assassinate John Kennedy. Louis Neisser, because of his prestige as a famous New York attorney, was brought in to write the introduction to the notorious Warren Report, not the one printed by the New York Times or the government printing office. They didn't use his introduction, but the one published by Doubleday and Company in 1964 has an introduction of Louis Neisser. And I had charted out in that introduction one lie after another lie after another lie, not based on any fact that was going to be in the Warren Commission hearings or the testimony or the evidence. It didn't support his introduction, and he wrote it. And Louis Neiser is the attorney that you speak to if you want to know why Robert Blakey, the chief counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassinations, does work and gets paid by Mo Dalitz of organized crime. Blakey was recommended for his position as a committee member by Congressman Christopher Dodd. This is in the newsletter, an article by Ted Gandolfo, who was a law partner with FBI Director L. Patrick Gray. Now, Christopher Dodd's father was the gentleman whose photograph was on the back of that record Lee Harvey Oswald made for military intelligence when he was in New Orleans area claiming he was a Marxist. And Congressman Dodd was sitting with Hale Boggs before the Warren Commission was formed, and Boggs was to be on the Warren Commission talking about the communists that killed John Kennedy. It's Christopher Dodd who put Mr. Blakey on the Warren Commission while he had been a law partner with indicted former FBI L. Patrick Gray. I was the first person to publish in August of 1972 that Patrick Gray should not investigate Watergate because he had covered up the ITT scandal, the killing of Jerry Lee on May in Los Angeles, the provocateur terrorist right-wing Isla Vista riots in Santa Barbara, the Charlie Manson military intelligence terrorist operation, the murders, seven murders in Los Angeles. He was covering up murders in Los Angeles that I wrote about, and I didn't know at the time that L. Patrick Gray had been a law partner of Christopher Dodd. And now Dodd put Blakey on the committee. Gandolfo wrote, many of the most frightening and recurring questions presented by the John Kennedy and Martin Luther King assassinations are those dealing with the roles of the intelligence agency. The Church Committee revealed their criminal excesses and their close cooperation with organized crime. And then he claims to say that Richard A. Sprague, who was a guest on his show, told me that he refused to yield to the intelligence services. But that would be yet to be seen. There's Richard E. Sprague, the writer, and Richard A. Sprague was the investigator, the district attorney, in working under Arlene Specter in Pennsylvania. I have nothing to see about Mr. A. Sprague in terms of his honesty or dishonesty. His claim to fame was prosecuting Tony Boyle, and even that went to another trial. But there wasn't anything great on killing the mine leader, Mr. Yablonsky, and his family, because the people involved said from the beginning, Tony paid us and Tony did it. So that wasn't the greatest scoop or investigation in history. So I don't agree, carte blanche, that we would have gotten a better investigation out of Arlene Specter's law cohort in Pennsylvania than Mr. Blakey. I think it's a six of one and half a dozen of another. Again, if the people setting up the investigation are covering primary evidence and are in collusion of conspiracy, why would they be ready for an investigation, and what difference who covers it? Ted Gandolfo wrote that the rules of the committee, formulated with the assistance of Congressman Don Edwards of the Constitutional Civil Liberties Committee, had been flagrantly violated under the leadership of Chairman Louis Stokes and Counsel Blakey. They subpoenaed a witness, Robert McEwen, who couldn't have his own attorney present and who was abused. They've insulted and threatened other witnesses. They're not allowed a recording or a transcript of their testimony. They're not permitted a public hearing. Jerry Ray and James Earl Ray were told they may not have an attorney of their choice when they go before Mr. Blakey. Their sister was told she may not have a counsel. Louis Neiser, as the attorney of Mr. Blakey, should make it quite evident, based upon the way he handled the Warren report then and the reason we're investigating it now, that Blakey should be off that committee. Now, I hope the people that take these tapes will sit down and write a letter to Mr. Robert Blakey. No, don't write to him. Write to President Jimmy Carter, the White House, and say we thoroughly disagree with the techniques and tactics of spending taxpayers' $2 million to investigate the assassination of John Kennedy and the assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King. And we believe that this investigation is a fraud. We are researchers, or we are concerned citizens. We are world watchers, international. And we want the record to show that you cannot come back later and say that in 1977, 1978, the federal government under the House Select Committee did an investigation. The Warren Report was a fraud and led to the Watergate exposés. The Watergate Senate Select Committee was a cover-up. It didn't do its job. It led to the Rockefeller Committee on the CIA that got too hot. They closed that up. It led to the Senator Church Committee and now this fraudulent committee. Write to the President of the United States. Keep a carbon of the letter. Send me a copy. And we'll continue next week with our news account for you world watchers. I hope this format works out for you, getting an hour a week of news with a printed sheet out. And I hope we can spread the information around the country to friends and relatives and concerned people. I'll be sending another tape next week. This is June the 1st, 1978, Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. Here, the next tape will